You're listening to Robert Kelly's
You Know What, Dude?
On the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com.
Welcome to the You Know What, Dude podcast. This is a special edition where Robert goes one-on-one with some of the most interesting people in the world. Or at least in his world. So sit back, relax, and enjoy.
You Know What, Dude?
You Know What, Dude?
You Know What, Dude?
The You Know What, Dude podcast. One on one.
Guessed by actually by that outfit.
But black on black? Oh, to the
half shirt.
They call them neck punch.
What? All right, ready?
I'm ready.
Oh, testing 1, 2. Test 1, 2. Let me hear you.
And 3, 2, 1. You Know What, Dude?
Yeah. I'm just going to tap your mic a little quickie.
Tap it.
Just to make sure it's working. Huh. Just want to dummy.
That's
cool. I'd have a plug in.
That would help.
There you go. All right, testing 1, 2. Jackie?
Testing 1, 2. You Know What, Dude? What?
You just have a soft voice, I guess. A very soft voice.
Let me just hold it like a little baby microphone. Like a little baby microphone. What?
All right, ready?
Hi, baby microphone.
Mm-hmm.
Can I hold it like a baby microphone?
You want to hold it?
Kind of.
Go ahead. What do we want to do?
This is going to be better, right? A little baby microphone.
I just want to see if baby. It's working.
Tip. What you got?
Yeah, it's working.
Tip?
See that?
What you got from a tip? We got a good tip.
All right, listen.
We got a good tip. Oh, tip.
All right, so anyways.
Tip.
I'm leaving all this in.
No, you're not.
Oh, absolutely. I don't edit at all.
We didn't start that. I'm ripping off Bobby Tisdale. You can't have me starting off ripping off Bobby Tisdale.
Well, then you explained it, so now you're out. That's how it works. If you explain the thievery, then you get to... Don't you hear anything that's going on in the comedy world? All right. This is a one-on-one. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are those large chocolate peanut M&Ms?
Those are awesome.
Oh. My dream did not come true.
The worst. This is the worst tasting M&M ever.
Oh, is this a Coca or Coca Light?
Oh, Light. Sorry.
It's okay. No, it's okay. Oh, is it zero? I'll take zero.
Yeah,
I'm a zero.
There we go.
Goes with my nickname. All right.
For those of you who can't see, which is everybody, Bobby just poured himself a Coke from a bottle. How great is that?
Well, right, maybe I will edit it out. All right, this is Robert Kelly's You Know What, Dude, one-on-one. And I'm tonight.
There's Ian here, so it's kind of like one-on-two.
No, he's not talking. This is a one-on-one. I don't do one-on-ones with half of people. You keep quiet, and you talk to me.
All right.
This isn't a one-on-two. This is a one-on-one. I'm trying to change my podcast theme.
You got to switch up the format, man. There are a lot of podcasts out there.
Yeah, so listen. One-on-one with... who nobody in the comedy scene, as far as fans of comedy, know who you are. But if it's true,
you're trying to build me up.
I'm building you up right now. Let me do it. But if you like comedy whatsoever, you've had a part of bringing some of the greatest comedians to walk the earth to people.
Sure, okay. I think that's fair.
It's absolutely fair. And these people don't even know you exist. I've known you exist for...
hours.
I've known you for 3 days.
Yeah.
Now, I've known you for years, but it came upon me. I was shocked to find out how much influence you had in the comedy world, especially when it came to Comedy Central. Let's just go back. People don't know this, that... you founded Comedy Central Records.
Yes. As crazy as that sounds. Yes. It was in 2002. And, I'd just been a comedy fan for years and had run this label that imploded massively, and I didn't know what to do.
But wait a minute. Stop. Back up. Yeah. First of all, this is Jack Vaughn.
Hey, everybody.
Jack Vaughn. Comedy, who runs... What is it? You run at Sirius. What is the actual title?
The Comedy Channels.
The Comedy Channels at Sirius.
XM.
XM.
Yes.
Satellite radio.
Satellite radio.
You've
worldwide.
Been there,
nationwide.
Been there for, well, worldwide.
Nationwide.
Nation. But people steal it worldwide.
Yes, in Canada. Yeah. people like it.
People steal.
Sure.
So you just started there this year.
Yes.
Great. And before that, you were at Comedy
Dynamics.
New Wave Entertainment.
Yep.
Making hour specials. And making content for
all
comedy.
Sorts of content.
Right.
Why not?
Okay. But before that, you were the founder of Comedy Central Records.
Yes.
And let's go before that.
Sure.
Because that's what the thing that people don't know about you is that you look like, I don't mean this as an insult.
You look
industry. You could be the industry side of it. You can always tell the entertainment side of it in a party, and then who's industry. You would definitely be industry.
I fall under industry. I'm not talent.
You don't fall under talent.
Ugh.
Yeah, maybe now it's very alty now. So
what's
you
the
might.
Giveaway? What's the giveaway?
The Henleys, the three button
pullovers.
I don't
know what you're talking about Henleys.
The three button shirt. It's a pullover with three buttons.
All right. I wear those occasionally.
Hmm.
You've seen me in those occasionally.
I've seen you in three of them this week.
I'm on vacation, man.
I actually bought one to make you feel comfortable.
Oh,
I told Donna, go get me a Henley. She's like, why?
Boy.
I go, I don't want Jack to feel out of place. I want him to feel like I'm
a uniform.
I'm assimilating a little
bit. We're
on
a team.
We're on a Henley team.
Maybe playing some kickball. This is why I am industry and not talent, ladies and gentlemen.
No, you're actually very funny.
Stop.
You make me laugh a lot. You really do.
Likewise.
You're a very funny guy.
We've got rapport.
We do have rapport.
But another podcast.
But that's a whole other podcast. These are very short podcasts.
All right.
But the thing that blows me away about you, okay, and I have to give people backstory on you, because you have such an interesting life. You've had such an interesting family. Your father headed the Peace Corps back in the 70s, am I correct?
60s.
60s. Ugh, worse, right?
Yeah, really. All the hippies? Are you kidding me?
Come on.
Gross.
But the 70s, it fell apart, right? The
no,
80s, whatever.
It's never fallen apart.
I thought
it's a great
was in
institution.
Iran. No, not the Peace Corps. His job, he took you. You were in Iran before the Shah was taken down, correct?
Yeah. Ugly
and
times.
You,
not good.
You were a 5-year-old getting beat up. As a child,
I wasn't a very tough 5-year-old, admittedly.
Right, but I mean, if for a guy to look at you, if I was in a room and I was to look at you, or anybody else in the room, you have to fight one of these guys, I'd fight you. I'd pick you.
Oh yeah.
But it would probably be the mistake of my life.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Well, your puns would literally beat me to the ground.
Oh, sure. No. Sure. Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. I thought we were talking about physical.
But the thing with you is that the one thing that I learned about you, you have no fear. You're one of the most fearless people I've ever met in my life.
Thanks, man.
You lived in Guatemala for 3 years as a kid.
Yep.
You had a story about your prom getting pulled over by gorillas.
Right. Gorillas.
Gorillas, not...
Not like apes.
Gorillas. Yeah. There's not a bunch of silverbacks.
Quite frankly, that would have been more terrifying, I think.
What?
Just a bunch of gorillas coming out from nowhere. They rip off people's faces. I read the news.
These guys.
That's awful.
These guys pulled you over at gunpoint on your prom night.
Yeah.
Got you on your hands and knees.
Yeah.
And then we're going to do what to you?
Lord knows. I mean, now that you sound... It sounds bad when you say it that way.
Yeah, you know where I went on my prom? A Chinese restaurant. No problems. Just drove there. I was in America.
Sure. There was a lot of MSG in the 80s. I don't know.
This is my problem with you.
Could be trouble.
You downplay. If I got pulled over by gorillas.
Gah,
whatever.
Yeah, right.
my fins. I shouldn't even use the word gorilla. We should have given up with another word. What's another word for those people?
Marxist freedom fighters. Let's say that.
Gorillas. So anyways, if I got pulled over at gunpoint on my prom, put on hands and knees and made it through that, do you understand how that would be like my opening story everywhere I went? I mean, I would
that's only half the story. The it starts out we're at the house of the largest drug dealer in Guatemala, and Guatemala was a crazy drug transshipment point at that era. It was kind of like Scarface level
really?
Of cocaine at that party. Just everywhere. And they were shooting off guns in the house. And
you were there?
Yeah. And then the gorilla thing came afterward in a separate incident.
So you were at a drug lord's house for your prom?
Yeah.
Why?
I've been trying to figure that out. And I've been talking with people who went with me for a while. And someone knew. I guess someone in my class was dating a low-level drug trafficker. I'm just piecing the story together now, actually. Because I, you know, being in high school in Guatemala is sort of like being in NAM.
Yeah.
So everyone, you know, there were 19 people in my graduating class. We're sort of tightly knit group, even though no one liked each other.
You have meetings.
We're kind of like an A team, you know. There were just different, because no one believes the story.
Yeah.
My wife didn't believe the story until we had dinner with someone who was there.
Right.
A friend of mine who was there came to New York and we had dinner, and she added new parts of the story. She's
that
like,
you didn't
"Holy
know.
Crap! You're not making this up." I'm like, "Nah, it's." And it didn't seem weird at the time. She's just like, "Yep, sure. We live in Guatemala. This is how things go." But it was pretty crazy times.
And then you come to America. You come back here because Guatemala.
I am love America.
But you come here. 19, when you're 19, you graduate high school, correct?
Yeah.
And you're
18,
like,
though. I'm
all
not.
Right, 18. And you're like, I'm out. I'm gone.
Yeah.
I'm out of this country.
I left Guatemala the second I graduated, probably the early morning after I graduated. We're just out because I didn't think that my survival chances were very good there.
Do you think you would have been killed?
Better than average chance.
You see, now, if I had that, I would be, it'd be, you say it like there might be rain tomorrow. Is there going to be rain tomorrow? There's a 50-50 chance.
There's a bunch of distance now, though, in fairness. You know,
right.
There's 25 years distance, so I can pretend to be cool about it.
Well, you weren't back then.
Yeah, I don't know. The problem is when you're in it, it sort of feels like, this is just normal.
Right.
And you get accustomed to it. And I didn't even realize it was a good story until a couple years afterwards. Because it's like, yep, just another day.
Yeah.
In high school. But yeah, so I think there's... I don't mean to seem callous about it, but it was... It seemed normal at the time, and then when I started telling the story, it sort of seemed crazy.
And your father's book, which I have, which I was going to read this week, but I never... Since I have a four-year-old...
Yeah, you're not going to read
anymore.
I didn't
anymore. Have 1 second of reading. I would literally hit the bed every night. I'd just be just done.
I know the feeling.
People don't know that we just spent 7 days?
7 days on a boat.
7 days on a boat in the canals of Belgium.
We were doing a thing with a guy. Never mind.
We were dealing drugs. No, I'm kidding.
What?
I'm kidding. We were just on the boat with the family and friends, and it was great.
It was a lot of fun.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
But it was definitely, having the kids added a wrinkle that very taxing. The greatest thing ever.
Yeah, and we didn't even suffer the brunt of it. It was the wives.
The wives, yeah, thank God.
Below decks.
Thank God. Yeah, we were up
in the galley. We were living large upstairs.
Yeah.
Driving the boat.
Yeah, 3 miles an hour straight.
Blasting down
hours.
The canals.
And then every time they pop their head up, we're like, "Oh no, we need
we need pure concentration here, ladies. take care of the child, folk.
I can't right now. There's a bridge I have to go under.
There's 8 miles down the straightaway. We're blasting at 4 kilometers an hour. We need all the concentration.
It's funny today because we took the train today to Bruges. It took us 5.5 hours from Newport, right?
So you,
what is it?
Oostend, yeah.
Oostend to Bruges took us 5.5 hours on the boat. It took us 14 minutes by train.
Tops.
Tops.
Yeah.
It's
tops.
Like,
yeah. It was a very poor choice of transportation.
we got to Brussels. It took us another 5 hours.
Yeah.
To get from Bruges,
what took us quite literally 22 hours
Ghent.
In transit was an hour and 15 minutes by train.
It literally.
How dumb.
Yeah, we really,
are
We really went back in time.
So dumb.
Ugh.
So dumb.
Ugh. We could have took mopeds. We would have got there faster.
We had to sleep on the boat, too.
We had to sleep on the boat.
Oh, but don't forget the 37-second showers we were able to take.
Yeah, those are fun. You got to wash your butt, your ding-ding, and one armpit.
Oh, with lukewarm to cold water.
And then you got to stand in it until you push the button and it drained.
Oh, that released right into the canal. Yeah. Ooh, eco-friendly and gross.
I had a ring around the ankles for 3 days.
Ugh.
So... So
it's not as appealing as we're making it out, everybody.
Well, it was actually a really good time.
It was fun.
It was fun. Would you ever do it again?
It's like a water RV.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe somewhere else.
It was a really good time. It was a really good time.
But it was, picture this. If we went to, what was it, Ghent.
I think you're pronouncing it correctly, actually.
Ghent?
Yeah.
Yeah. If you went to Ghent.
Like a local.
Okay, Ghent. And we spent 2 days in a hotel, then went to Bruges, 2 days in a hotel, and then went to Brussels, 2 days in a hotel.
That sounds like a fun trip.
Yeah, it would have took 48 minutes by train.
Yeah.
Instead of the hours behind a wheel, a helm.
Yeah.
Jesus.
RV of the seas, baby.
Filling up the water.
Ugh. But apparently, so we were supposed to stay on these canals.
Never mind the spiders. Can we talk about the? Can anybody talk about
God.
The spiders?
What are spiders doing at sea?
But why?
It was like arachnophobia on the boat.
But who doesn't clean the fucking spiders?
I don't know. But it's the weirdest thing because we would dock, and 8 hours later there were these
webs.
Spider webs. It's like a haunted house. And I don't know what. Yeah.
Yeah, and my kid waking up every day with bite marks on him.
Yeah, like he had the measles or something.
He's going to have superhero powers by the time we get back to the U.S. Fucking crazy.
I don't know, man. I don't know. So everyone, if you're going to rent a boat, just beware of the spiders.
Yeah, beware of the spiders.
Yeah, sea spiders will get you every time.
Bring a bunch of napkins.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah,
so anyways,
sprays of some sort.
So we spent this time here.
Yeah.
Now, I'm kind of jumping all over the place because you're...
We're never going to talk about the label.
We are going to talk about the label.
But there's too much good travel stuff to talk about.
There's a lot of travel stuff.
We've got to talk about Guatemala.
I know. We have Guatemala. But
Bobby went to Guatemala twice with me, and it was awesome.
No, once was awesome. The first time was one of the biggest nightmares of my life.
It was really fun for me.
It was fun for you because you lived there, and then you went back, and you invite me to Guatemala like we're going to Acapulco. And then the night before we leave, I read about it on the internet, and it says, don't go. If you're American, don't go.
Yeah, that was awesome.
And I had $400 cash on me, like I was going to buy Christmas presents for everybody.
No, that was a bad idea.
Yeah, and then you told me, you didn't tell me, like, the food. There was chicken and steak and rice and beans. That's it. Everywhere we went.
Every restaurant we had, it was in Spanish, so I had to translate what was on it. And I was like, what's this? It's like, every.
Yeah, by day three.
Every meal's a goddamn.
You snapped at me day three.
There was a little snapping. It's tortillas and beans and rice and chicken and
you went, Bobby. It's chicken. It's chicken, rice, and steak.
Yeah.
That's all they have.
What do you
it's
want?
A,
what permutation of that do you care for?
What do you think? Carbonara? What do you think they're going to have? They don't have pastries. There's no fucking bakeries, you fatso.
No paella.
I really thought it was like Andrew Zimmerman. So, yeah, you took me to Guatemala. We went to Guatemala.
Oh, those were so much.
It literally said on the website, at the airport is most likely you'll get robbed.
Yeah.
They says on, but on the website.
But you're a mean looking dude.
Hang on one second.
You can hang on.
First of all, on the website to the country you're going to, when they tell you not to go, that's not good publicity for them.
Yeah, bad for tourism too.
It's terrible for tourism. That means it's really bad. Okay? So now we're going there. You rent a car, which is hilarious.
Oh yeah.
Because it took 3 hours for them to check every dent.
Oh yeah. There's no fast tracking.
And then we get into some car that I don't even know the company's name. Mazuzuki?
You've never ridden in a Mazuzuki?
Yeah, what the fuck is a Mazuzuki? Right? It's a 5-door.
The Mazuzuki Limper. Yeah.
It's a 5-door hatchback.
Yeah. It's the style, man.
So we're in this car. We go to this beautiful city, Antigua, right? Is that it?
Yeah, the former colonial capital. That's where the drug dealer's house was on prom night.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Beautiful place.
Not bad.
I mean, it's, and that's where I left $400 cash on a toilet.
Yeah.
Because I had a money belt on. Yeah. Because I'm too chubby to have a money belt. So anyway, I had to pick it up over my tits
to get the money out. I don't like picturing that.
And then I took the money out and I left it on the toilet. And then we're in the mountains of Guatemala, and I was like, I left my money.
Oh, that was a bad day.
You're like, yep, you did. Oh. There was no going back for that.
No.
gave somebody a new house.
I think you realized within 15 minutes.
Right, and then we went back.
We were still eating at the restaurant.
Did we go back? Oh, did I?
No, we were still eating at the restaurant. And you went back, and it was long gone.
Yeah, it was long gone. Some guy had bought 19 donkeys.
Yeah, someone's a major, like, ranchero now.
He put six more levels on his house.
Oh, yeah.
So then we're going up to this. Then we get into a thunderstorm in the mountains.
That's right.
And you were scared.
Yeah, because the visibility was zero. There's no guardrails. It's one. Buses pass on the curve going about 70 miles an hour.
Yeah, and it's a straight 100-foot drop.
On either side of a one-lane highway. And by the way, it sounds like I'm exaggerating, but there was about 10 feet of visibility.
Yeah, no.
Max.
It was 10 feet. We're in a Mazuzuki.
The Mazuzuki Limper.
Going up a mountain.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
In the rain.
Yeah.
With buses flying by us.
Yeah, no guardrails.
And there's a 100-foot drop to the right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did our tire pop then, or did it pop the next day?
That was the next day.
Yeah. And we're New Yorkers and haven't changed a tire in about a decade. And to see us struggle in the rain fixing this tire.
In the mud.
Really a sad, sad test.
The only thing that saved us was that rug I bought for $50,000.
So Bobby bought this schlocky, cheapo, touristy rug at the market.
I got to stop. This is what happened.
This is 100% true. Whatever Bobby says, don't buy it.
We get out of the car, and 19 women with little tiny Abe Lincoln hats attack me.
I don't know what he is talking about.
The little Abe Lincoln hats. They have those little hats. Those little Abe Lincoln hats. Those little hats. The little...
I think you have a fever dream. I don't know what you're talking about.
Don't they wear little hats? Those little Guatemalan women.
Sure. Anyways. Sure.
They came out with the... They were like, oh, buy rug, buy do. And I was like, I go, we're going to the market. When I get back, I'll buy something.
Right.
Right? When we got back, they were waiting for me. Remember?
Oh, yeah.
They were waiting at the car, 20 of them.
No, sure.
And you sent me to the friggin' dogs.
You deserved it.
Why?
Because you had already said that you were going to get something, and they don't forget stuff like that.
I lie to people all the time. What, you can't lie to people in Guatemala?
No, not when it comes to stuff like that.
I lie to homeless people in New York.
Ugh. No, there's a level.
And then there was the 20 of them.
They're working on another level,
and they were
man.
Like, you said you're going to buy. And I had to buy that rug. I had to buy the rug to get them off my back. And it was like $40.
Ugh.
And it was like a $2 rug.
Ugh, you think you got robbed with your $400. Man, oh man. So there's this schlocky $40 rug that I think you're being low on price-wise. And it was raining out. We blew a tire in the middle of nowhere. Mm. And we useless New Yorkers are struggling with the jack and this is how useless I can't even remember the lug wrench or whatever you used to get the wheel off.
Yeah.
And Bobby puts this this crappy blue dyed blue tourist blanket on the ground so we can kneel on it. It just soaks up all the water on the ground. And then winds up dyeing my pants blue. We're struggling for 45 minutes in the pouring rain trying to get this tire changed.
Our pants knees were different colors.
Truly, I had to throw the pants away. And I think we just left the rug there because it wasn't worth taking this.
It was really
this $80.
Bad. It smelled like a dead cat.
Ugh. It was so bad.
I think they made the rug out of cat.
The least fun Indiana Jones movie you could ever watch.
But then we get back to the hotel, and it stopped raining. We wound up going to dinner at a local restaurant.
It was nice.
Yeah, until I got... I got dysentery. Now I'm in the hotel room.
It was blasting out both ends.
Well, I was in the hotel
room. It was bad. Like, it was...
I was literally had to choose between poop and puke.
At the same time.
I had to choose...
You should have just gotten in the bathtub and let fly.
I'm dying, and I just wanted my grandmother.
You got angry at me that I didn't go in and hold your head. You
I didn't
said
want
that
you to hold
me.
My head.
You
I
were
just,
furious.
How about a...
No, dude, you wanted me to hold your head
I was
while
mad
yakking.
Because you didn't say, are you okay?
Oh, yeah, I did.
No, you didn't.
You're an adult.
Buddy, you threw me premium crackers, like four of them. You'll be all right.
I got you Pepto-Bismol. I got you all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, you did get me Pepto-Bismol. But you were annoyed that I was sick.
No, I wasn't.
You had an annoyed
attitude. I was completely sympathetic.
You did not. Dude, are you, dude, what, are you a serial killer?
I was annoyed you were being a little bitch about it.
Bitch!
Hold my hand.
Dude, I was shooting a Guatemalan steak out of every orifice.
Dude. In fairness, that's the worst kind of... Yeah. The Montezuma's Revenge you get in Guatemala that you're describing is only... But I don't know if I've told you this, and I'm not making this up just to make you feel bad.
Yeah.
It's the kind of dysentery you get from consuming fecal matter.
So I got poop. I ate poop.
Yeah, someone didn't wash his hands appropriately.
So some dishwasher had poop on his hands.
Yeah, yeah.
Didn't read the sign in the bathroom.
Probably. Yeah.
And I ate poop.
Yep.
That's great.
That's the long and short of it.
That's great. You're telling me that 6 years later.
Well, I feel like there's enough distance where you can have a sanguine outlook on it, right?
Oh, God. Oh, God. I ate poop?
Probably. Not probably. Almost assuredly.
Oh, well. All right. There you go.
Who wants to talk about records? This is so much better.
So listen.
We've had so much fun. I have had a tremendous amount of fun.
Well, here's the next party that sucks because we go back again.
Sure.
We'll have to do part two of the podcast. Stop.
Okay, sure.
Stop, really, really quick.
Are you talking about Muck Simone?
I'm talking about the part where I found obsidian knives on the ground.
There's so many good parts to these stories, man.
Right.
We can't talk about Comedy Central Records. We got to talk about this stuff.
We have to talk about Chocolate Chip. We'll talk about it a little bit.
All right. We go. There's an archaeological site.
We got plenty of time. We got 20 more minutes.
What? No. So we're at an archaeological site called Caminal Huyu, which is in the center of Guatemala City, and it's the location of one of their big obsidian knife manufacturing centers. This is a late classic period Mayan site, probably 500, 900. A.D.
Yeah, right. This is 1,000 years old, right?
Sure.
Right?
Yeah. More. Yeah.
2,000.
Sure.
Okay. So I look on the ground. I find an obsidian knife.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what's this? You're like, that's a knife. That's what they used to use to cut fruit and cut things open, right?
Really cool artifact.
Right. I found a couple of them.
Yeah.
I put them in my pocket.
Yeah. The place is lousy with them.
Right. They're all over the place.
Yeah.
So I find them. Now, cut to, I'm in the airport. Still with shitting my pants and puking.
Right.
Panicking that I'm going to be arrested.
For smuggling antiquities.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, I'm in the bathroom. I'm shitting my pants. And all of a sudden, two of the cops come in. Two of the airport police come in.
Are you sure you're not adding to the story?
Buddy, I swear to God, I'm in the bathroom. They come in. So now, I gently go out. I wrap all the antiquities in toilet paper. And I go to the barrel as I'm going out, and I drop them in the barrel. The guy who changes the trash just took the trash out. It's an empty barrel.
I imagine him as Belush. Once again, Dr. Kelly, there's nothing you possess that I could not take.
I drop them in the barrel. You hear, ching. It just made the loudest. There's nothing in there except obsidian knives just smashing to the bottom of the barrel.
1,000 years of history wrapped up with old paper towels.
I went back into the bathroom, and thank God I was crapping again. And the noise.
Oh yeah, thank God.
The noise my asshole made the cops leave the bathroom. It sounded like my ass was throwing up.
We're in public, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. In a nice restaurant. In a nice hotel in Belgium.
So. Now we're on the plane. I'm dying on the plane. Oh. You haven't talked to me in 2 hours, by the way. You stopped talking to me. Oh, like I embarrassed you on a date. like you had to give me a ride home.
You had bad meat sweats to too.
The meat sweats were awful.
Oh.
So now I'm on the plane. Meat sweats.
I really did feel bad for you, though.
I know you showed it, and
that's my concern.
Yeah. Well. Anyway. I'm sitting there. Then we have to change plans in Houston.
Yeah.
I leave my Sony little portable gaming system that I just got.
You lost so much money on that trip.
The trip to go there was like $100. I lost $1,000. $1,000.
Dude, why don't you bring your family silver down?
So now... We go back. It's all over.
Right.
Bang, right?
Sure.
And and I was, you know, and when you're there too, the people are very little people.
Yeah.
So you really, you know, I didn't need a money belt. You just have to put your money in your breast pocket.
Sorry.
So if you see someone hopping, just hold the top of their head down. Hey, don't rob me. So we go back.
Yeah.
We go back. You want to go back, right?
A second time, yeah. Yeah, it's just sort of a redo.
A redo.
Like, yeah.
And I'm rocking and rolling this time.
Oh, yeah.
I'm rocking and rolling until...
We throw a wrinkle in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So there's, in certain areas, the Mayan Indians worship a deity called San Simon, which is a combination of, I think, Judas and Pedro de Alvarado and some sort of Mayan deity all wrapped into one. Yeah, it's kind of pure evil.
Yeah, and my uncle Sean.
Sure. Bad guy.
He looks...
The Mayans hated your uncle Sean. It's been... I've seen the hieroglyphs.
The guy looked like... The guy looked like a hobo. I mean, it doesn't look like... I mean, any other god is like godlike. This guy had a cigar and a hat.
Yeah, wear a black
what
hat.
What god
black
has
suit?
A hat?
No, just a bad creepy dude, and they offer grain alcohol and
cigars
to him. Yeah,
cigars.
Yeah, and they get together. There's a small city across the river. The name escapes me right now, where they have a life size San Simon lying down in a glass coffin.
Yeah,
in a small house, and they just get blasted on grain alcohol and smoke cigarettes and just worship this thing all day, and you can go visit that house.
Yeah, so
I thought you should see it.
Yeah, so here's the thing though. He doesn't set me up with this. You set me up. You say, hey, let's go take a boat ride.
Yeah, we
so
take a boat.
We get on a beautiful boat.
Sure.
We're going across this lake.
Why not?
To an island.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
We get to the island. We get off the boat. We walk over the pier. You hire a little boy with a man face. Literally.
He looked.
It was a 4-year-old child with the head of a man.
Yeah.
He had a scar from ear to ear. He looked like a James Bond villain.
Sure. He seemed like
just his head.
He seemed like a good guide for you.
He literally was three feet tall, maybe two something, with a man head.
Right.
He had a cleft chin. He had a scar from his... He had, like, an eyebrow, but a little piece missing out of it. Like he'd been in, like, 19 bar fights.
Right.
And you hire this sucker to take me into the city to go find Max Simone.
He seemed like a really reasonable guide.
He scared the shit out of me.
And he was... The price was right. I think it was, like, $3.
$3. This kid takes me up a hill into a town, into some old lady's house.
Yeah.
And there's a statue of a guy with a hat.
Yeah.
And then I gotta give him money.
Yeah.
I had to throw him money.
There's no price for experience.
And then the man face boy left me. He goes, okay, because apparently he didn't give him enough money to take me back. He just gave him enough money to get me there.
Oh.
So now I'm walking around this village by myself. I find myself walking through a market, an open air market, with like, I don't know, it looked like chicken hearts, and then vegetables I've never seen before,
right.
and like Sasquatch feet, and
sure.
I was a giant among people just walking. I stuck out like a. I remember just walking by a dog dying.
Yeah,
there was just a dog.
There are a lot of
dying
dead dogs there,
but this one wasn't dead. It was dying. It was like on the verge of death. And I'm watching it die. And people are walking by it like it was a fucking rug. And they weren't doing anything.
That town's kind of like Serpent in the Rainbow,
it's
I feel like.
It's fucking the creep. You left me. I'm walking through this town. I finally found a coffee shop. I sit. I grab a chair and put it on the outside of the coffee shop.
Right.
And wait for you.
I went to get an ice cream.
My plan was that either I'm going to live here.
Right.
If you don't come back, or you'll walk by me.
I was getting concerned when you didn't show up back at our scheduled rendezvous point.
The rendezvous point, how do I know?
It's a small town. We could have, I don't know. Those were fun trips, man. Mm. We need to do that again. Bobby's lighting a cigar for our listeners. And that's how Comedy Central Records started.
Well, here's the backup point to this, to even get to that, which we can get into right now, is that you've lived this life. I've never met anybody who's traveled more than you, who's gone to the most... I mean, you've been to Syria during Ramadan. You've... I mean, and you have to... If you don't visually see... I'm just going to describe you, and I don't want you to be insulted.
I'm going to be insulted if you set it up like that.
If you take... If you took a show in the 50s, like a sitcom, an American sitcom, like Leave It to Beaver or My Three Sons, you're that one of those guys.
Ladies.
You're a thin, small, Dick Van Dyke looking motherfucker. I mean, am I wrong?
No.
All right.
Lost Kennedy.
No.
Right. I mean, you part your hair to the side. You're a thin glass of water. You're a polite little son of a bitch.
You can say scrawny.
Yeah, you're scrawny.
All right.
Good word.
Yeah.
You're scrawny.
All right.
But, and you have a very even temperament. I've never seen you go too high or too low. You're the exact opposite of me. I mean, literally.
Well, it's funny, because when we first met, it was, I think, backstage at the Dane show. And you were talking with Gary, I think. And I just thought to myself, I remember thinking to myself, man, there is no way we were ever going to be friends. And I love this guy to pieces. You're one of my favorite people.
You're one of my favorite people. And I have a very small list. And it's really weird, too, when people, I tell people I'm friends with you, they're like, why? Like, not even on your end, though. They're like, why would he like you? But it's weird that you have this incredible life. And then when I did meet you, it was at a Dane Cook. It was at
MSG.
MSG, the small theater. You were presenting Dane with 80,000 copies.
Oh, the gold record.
The gold record. Yeah. And this is when Dane popped.
Right.
USA Today, 80,000 copies, first week.
Yeah.
It hasn't been done.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. And then I come to find out that you, before Comedy Central never had a record label. No, people were doing CDs on a very low level. I mean,
kind of no one was doing them. I
mean, nobody was doing it. If they did do it, it was like doing it at their house or some crappy version of it.
Yeah, I mean, all the big artists, I feel like, had on, but only the top, you know, like Dice and Chris Rock and Seinfeld. The top names, but anyone below the top names didn't do it. Other than I think there were a couple of Bill Hicks records. And they weren't. I mean, they were very, very hard to find.
Because you started in music, you're in a punk band in Guatemala, which is a whole nother thing.
Yeah,
and you're into music, and you had a record label with musicians.
Right.
Right. And that makes sense to me. How did you go, I want to do comedy? How could you be that big a fan of something? Because to do comedy, to deal with comedians, because we're the craziest fucking, we're nuts, right?
Yeah. Okay. In fairness, yeah. I mean, I don't want to mince words.
No. But how do you go from saying, okay, I want to go do comics. How do you get involved in that?
Well, you know, it was kind of weird because I was doing swing bands, if you remember that, being hip for about a half a minute in the mid to late 90s.
why swing bands?
Well, because there was this underground swing movement. It was, and all the swing bands really were ex-members of punk bands.
Oh, really?
And it was just, you know, alternative and whatever agitated guitar rock had gotten so boring and corporate-y at that by say the mid '90s. Mm-hmm. And there was this underground movement of swing bands. So I thought, this is a really cool scene. I want to put out these records, and so did that. But I'd always been a fan of comedy, and you know, watch stand up every chance I could, and knew all the sets. And then Mitch Hedberg had self-released his first album, his Strategic Grill Locations record, and just sold it off of his website. And I was like, how is something that good not in stores and distributed?
Right.
So I wanted to put out comedy records for a long time, and it just didn't. I was more like, am I out of my mind? Because these things haven't really sold since the late 70s or early 80s.
Right.
And I approached Comedy Central with the idea for it. And
What is your pitch? When you go into Comedy Central, you're going in as, they don't know you, right?
No.
They have no idea who you are.
No idea.
You walk in by yourself?
I walked in with a friend who was able to introduce me to Larry Divney, who was the head of the company back then.
Right.
But I look young and goofy, like you were painting a portrait of earlier.
Yes.
And
you should have a fishing rod all the time.
Yeah, and a propeller cap.
Yeah, and, right? and a chalkboard for your schoolwork.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, I looked 17 when I pitched the notion.
Really?
Yeah.
What was the pitch?
I was like, hey, I want to put out comedy records, and here's the proposal. So the long version of this is, Larry Divney, the head of the company, said, oh, you should talk to this woman named Holly Lim,
who
was head of new business development. And I go down with my friend and pitch her this idea. And, you know, I don't look authoritative or believable at all.
Yeah.
And she goes, oh, this is sort of an interesting thing, but we're talking to major labels about maybe doing licensing about it. And we're not sure it's a great idea. And she said, but the plan looks interesting, but I don't know if it's right for us. And she said, oh, I'd like to see more detail on this, 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 and this. And I said, I was reasonably sure I was getting the brush off, which was a perfect response to my proposal.
Right.
And I said, well, great. When can I? I'll get you more detail on this and head back whenever you want. And she goes, well, I'm going to be traveling for the next few weeks.
This definitely sounds like a brush-off.
Yeah, no, it's 100% brush-off.
Anytime somebody in the entertainment world goes, I'm going on a little vacation for a couple weeks, you're like, oh, fuck me.
Yeah, exactly. And and she goes, I said, well, where are you going to be? And she goes, I'm going to be in Las Vegas in 3 days. And I said, you're kidding. I'm going to be in Las Vegas in 3 days.
Were you?
No.
Oh, my God, you slimy little mother.
Yeah, no.
But wow.
I need, the swing label had imploded so badly. I was in a year and a half depression.
Really?
And yeah, I'd never wanted anything more in my life. I had to get out of Arizona. I was in Arizona at the time.
Right.
And I had to get out of Arizona. And so I just flew home and stayed up for 3 days straight working on this plan.
Right.
And then drove all night. I got the plan done about 3 a.m. on the day we were meeting, and then drove 8.5 hours or whatever, however long it was to Las Vegas. Get to the meeting with 10 minutes to spare, have no idea what I said, and just presented her this plan. And I kept calling and calling, and I would call her up and say, hey, I'm going to be in New York on business. Do you have a chance to meet?
Lies again.
Oh, yeah. And if she said yes, I'd buy the ticket. I wouldn't have any business in New York.
Right.
And if she said no, I wouldn't. And after about 9 months of pestering,
wow,
she said, yeah, all right, we'll give this a shot. And I owe Holly everything, because it just turned my life around.
Right.
Because the nice thing about it is that no one was doing it at the time. So kind of had the pick of the litter in terms of artists.
And Yeah.
So
what was your pick? Who did you start the label with?
The label was started... And, yeah, this is 2002, so none of these comics were really household names yet.
Right.
But it was Dave Attell, Lewis Black, Mitch, Bobcat Goldthwait, and this up and coming club comic named Dane Cook. And within 6 months, the label was profitable. And within 3 years, we were top 10 independent label, and then within 5 years, we were top 5. And it was really cool, because kind of there was no one else doing this. And at the time, Comedy Central had a lot of excess ad inventory, so we could put commercials on TV for these records, which no one else could do.
Yeah.
And so it was a really great marketing tool. And you had to convince record stores to even take them.
Right.
Because they didn't have comedy sections at that point.
So you invented the comedy section at record stores.
Well, the label was... Yeah. We had to push and push and push to get... Because there weren't any comedy records. There were 5 or 6 comedy records. So there wasn't a need for a section. So we had to put out enough of
them. By the end of record stores, there was a huge comedy section.
Yeah.
So you had a part in that.
Yeah, that was the... pretty much the result of putting out these, you know, getting enough volume out there to make it worthwhile for them to start sections.
Now, let me ask you a question. Mitch Hedberg, now this is something I heard, and I don't know if this is true. His first comedy half hour,
yeah,
he bombed.
Yeah, badly, and they re-edited it. So I put a DVD with the album on that. The album was called Mitch Altogether, and put a DVD on that of the edited Comedy Central half hour. And then I found in the vault the unedited hour show that they cut it down from. And you can see it if you buy the DVD. And that sounds like a very old-fashioned statement.
Yeah, it is.
So if you can find a DVD player and then can find the physical copy of the DVD, you can see that he just doesn't, the crowd doesn't get it. And they're dummies. That show was so good. And you just look at, you see people in the audience looking at each other like, what the hell is this?
Right.
And, oh my God, it's so good. And they just don't get it. Right. It makes me mad. But
well, it's like Mitch Hedberg was an acquired taste, though, because nobody did what he did.
Right.
It's almost like trying a new food. It's like, it's the presentation.
Right.
Was like, what is that? And then if you tasted it, if you got to know it, you're like, oh my God, this guy's hilarious.
Right.
It's almost like a rhythm.
Yeah.
That if it was like you could catch.
Well, yeah, you had to be on the right wavelength. I mean, because a lot of it's very bizarre.
It's very, dude.
But
someone asked me if I wanted a frozen banana. I said no, but yes, because I might want a regular one later.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
To come up with that joke, it's him doing it, the tempo he's doing it in,
right.
But it's also like, it's fucking ridiculous because it's such a, it's so smart.
Yeah, and it's
like, no, but yeah.
It's his inimitable style. The example I like to use is about the traffic light and the banana.
Go ahead.
Yeah, because on a traffic light, red means stop and yellow means slow down and green means go ahead. But on a banana, it's the exact opposite. Green means hold on and yellow means go ahead. And red means where'd you get that banana? And if you wrote that down and you read that and didn't know it was Mitch,
you'd think it was a kid's thing.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
But just the way he did it, his inimitable style was just so good. It was, just staggering.
Anyway. Now, who was the first one out of that? Now, when you put this together and did they give you an office right away or did you do it from your home?
Yeah. No, I moved to New York in the middle of winter and just started. I had a tiny little office and no assistant. I didn't have an assistant or anyone else working on the label for that matter for 6 or 7 years afterwards.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it was just you making.
Yeah.
So now
and Dane was taking off, right?
So at the same time.
It took off very quickly because he had released.
Now, most people think his fame is him just getting on Instant Messenger on AOL and MySpace.
The MySpace was.
And the MySpace. Yeah. And that's where his fame came from, his fans.
That's a lot of it.
Right.
But we repackaged his album and put a DVD of his comedy, of the TV shows he had on Comedy Central on it. And redid the artwork and put it into stores. And I think this was before digital. It was just CDs at that point.
Right.
So I didn't think it was going to sell more than 2,000 or 3,000 copies. Because he had sold about 6,000 copies on his own in 9 months, which was like an amazing amount of units.
Right.
And so shipped about 3,000 copies. And 2,000 of those sold within the first week.
Wow.
So we had to scramble, and we sold 2,000 copies of that record every week, like a Swiss watch, for 2 years.
What the fuck?
2,000 units every week, nonstop. I was just waiting for that 1 week when it would decline, and it never did. So by the time that was Harmful of Swallowed, so by the time Retaliation came out, we were ready to release Retaliation, we had quietly sold 250,000 copies. So I knew we could put a lot of money behind it. We spent tons of money, and I bought billboards and bus sides and phone booth advertising.
And you bought cardboard cutouts in Tower Records.
Pricing and positioning in all the...
People don't know that in the Tower Records or the stores, the record stores, where it is.
Yeah.
In the rack, and if it's on the board at the top of what's right. new.
Yeah.
And that costs money.
At the speed table. It costs a lot of money. So if you remember record stores, kids, there would be these things called listening stations where you could go on and put your headphones on and listen to the album before yeah. you bought. That cost $50 to $100 each store to put those in. So you could spend tens, hundreds of thousands of dollars really easily getting the record out there and available. And because there's no comedy section, you always had to spend money on positioning to put it in the front of the store racks.
Right.
Because otherwise it'd be in the back, Celtic music section, right? that no one would ever find.
Right.
So, yeah, it took a lot of money to launch a record. But because that $250,000 a unit Heartful of Swallow sales had happened, I was reasonably sure, and people were passionate about him. I mean, people, yeah. no one over 25 knew who he was, but everyone under 25 did, and they were passionate about it. So, Retaliation came out, it sold 84,000 or 86,000 copies first week, and was number 3 or 4 on the Billboard Top 200. And everyone was like, "What? Huh? What is this?
USA Today."
Yeah.
I remember crazy. Being at a gig. And every crappy hotel in the world gets the USA Today.
Yeah,
it's just yeah. What are they saying? That's the paper for stupid people because it has more pictures than words.
For those of you who like your news in color,
right? Yeah. So I remember opening it up, and it was him.
Yeah,
I was on the front cover actually. He was on the front cover. Now, did you have to get that stuff, that type of press?
Our press department did a really good job with it. But a lot of that just happens kind of on its own. There's a certain point where you don't need people pushing it, where it's just
right.
such an explosion that people just pick up the story.
Now, was he the first one that blew open the doors for you, or was that the one where people were like, oh my God?
Yeah, it was crazy times because. We could talk for hours about this side of it, but all the records wound up doing pretty well.
You got Lewis Black.
Lewis Black, and he was just starting to have appearances on The Daily Show.
And he's in his 50s at that time.
Yeah, must have been.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
Mitch Hedberg.
Yep. So the Dane Cook records, the first two did about 1.3 million copies each, and then. The Mitch Altogether is almost at 500,000. And then like a Dave Attell or a Lewis Black would do 100,000 to 150,000 copies. And what's so scary was I didn't know how long this would run because my last label lasted basically 18 months in success. So you're only as good as your next record. But the next wave was, I got pretty lucky too, because signed, Gaffigan and Geraldo and Swartzen and Daniel Tosh.
Jesus.
And this was 2005.
Yeah.
Todd Berry, and they weren't household names yet. So it was just kind of a guess on who was going to be good. Tosh.0 wouldn't come out for years.
But now this is where you're actually making people famous. I mean, you're assisting in this in a big way.
I like to think so.
I mean, absolutely.
Because some of these artists, the only content you could get from them was from the records. Like Mitch Hedberg didn't have anything other than a sort of a cut appearance on that 70s show
right. And
his half hour. So people were passing around these records. Right. And that's all I wanted to do. I just wanted to help people, to help these comics get out there because right. There's so much talent. Everyone talks about the renaissance in comedy. And that's 100% true because you know people like Birbiglia. And just all, I got to do another Stephen Wright record, and just all these tremendous comics, each with their own really distinct styles.
Right. Was it hard at any point to pick these people? Like you're picking winners out of the gate. You picked four winners, and then you go on to pick Geraldo and Tosh and all these people. And is there any point that you were like? That it fell off where you're like, I need to get out of this? Why did you leave something like that? Or was it the tech? Did you see the technology changing?
I think it was a little bit of both. I think I was a little bit bored because I did it for 10 years and I had accomplished kind of all I wanted to do at that point. Right. Wanted to try something different. So, but it was a good run. I mean, 10 years is a long time and the technology completely changed. Like the record industry is dead.
Did you get out before this or did you foresee that happening? And or did that happen on your watch?
I got out kind of just as it was cresting. I could see the writing on the wall because, you know, back when I put out an Aziz Ansari record or a Louis C.K. record in, say, 2008 or 2009, dates are all blending together now, but around then, those records, I think, sold 100 to 150,000 copies each. And today, those artists who are 2 to 3 times as famous, at least, are having a really hard time selling 8 to 10,000 copies. And it's all streaming now, and streaming pays fractions of a penny per play, so it's not a viable economic model. And Sirius is responsible for a lot of the royalties and was responsible for a lot of the royalties at Comedy Central, even before the channel. And that's a big part of the reason why I'm there now. It's just the whole thing has changed. It's gone from transactional CD sales to digital. So you know, you're looking at transactional physical CDs, DVDs, yeah, things like that, to transitional digital, which is iTunes. Now that is gone, and it's all streaming now, and streaming doesn't pay anything. So that's the real problem, the real crux of the matter, why everyone's scrambling and the record business is kind of dead.
Now, do you think that Sirius could ever do? Could you ever do what you did at Comedy Central at Sirius? Could Sirius get behind a comic and put their album out on Sirius satellite radio only?
We do a lot. We have deals with a lot of the labels to get an exclusive window on these albums, and we right. play them more. And I think comics who know their business know that SiriusXM is the place that can break them in the audio world.
Right.
So we have a lot of those deals. And
right.
we don't necessarily want to be the label. We can let someone else be the label and handle all of the
right.
the business side. We just want to be a place where these artists know they can come and get heard, and we can just be a great promotional and revenue outlet for
How big is comedy on Sirius right now?
It's big.
It's huge.
Yeah, it's big. People love it. We have 6 channels and tons of people listen to it.
Right.
Because it's great stuff. Because we have everything for every taste.
Do you have a blue channel, like a dirtier channel?
Raw Dog.
Is Raw Dog that's what
that
is?
Yeah, that's right. Where you air.
Right. No, it's true.
Ladies and gentlemen, Robert Kelly on Raw Dog, SiriusXM. Right.
I notice I've been playing more since you've... Since you've taken over,
you know what side your bread's buttered on.
Well, I love when people seem to get out of something before it goes bad, and get into the next version of it. You know what I mean? Because it would be a sad, shitty story to me that if you got you actually went from comedy albums to making comedy hours.
Right.
To making specials, and then now specials seem to be almost where records are, like they're kind
it's
of
tough.
It's
yeah,
it's not.
They're expensive to make, and there are few outlets for them.
And there's a million people who have specials now.
Yeah.
Like anybody can make a special with a fucking iPhone, put it out there, and it's there. And people don't know if you see a bunch of bad specials. Why are you going to want? How are you going to get to the good ones? And
right.
Where do you go for the good ones? Comedy Central, if you're on a Comedy Central label, it was almost like being on a professional team.
Right. Right. I like to think that we were, because I didn't put out more than a dozen records a year. And even that was a lot because we really wanted to focus on marketing. Because it's one thing to produce a record and get, put it out there and distribute it. It's another thing to really market it because the value that we had was the marketing.
Yeah.
And getting it out there. So what was the question?
I'm just saying that it's you've kind of transitioned, it seems, at the right time. like you got out of the album thing, went into the special thing, and now you're actually at the digital format.
Yeah.
Was that thought out, or was that just by chance?
Cold calculation, Bob. No,
I like to
pretend I'm a genius, but I think it was just really what interested me at the time,
right?
And wanted just to get out before it became a 9-to-5 job,
right?
And because it has to be interesting, especially in the arts. I feel like you have to be super, super, super passionate about something, or you have to get out.
Yeah.
Because it shows in the work, and you don't want to do a bad job.
Yeah.
For somebody. So, yeah. But at the risk of sounding too corporate, I mean, SiriusXM is amazing, just in the number of channels and that it actually pays the artists, and we have such a variety of really well curated content.
Right.
It seems like the place to be.
Yeah, I mean, it is weird because I've been through the whole thing. I actually did a record with you. I did a special.
What was the record called, Bobby?
Just the Tip.
Boom. What were the other names you were considering for it?
I don't know. Didn't we had a bunch that you really told me to go fuck myself? I mean, not even like you're like, yeah, no. I had a bunch of fucking shit names for that.
And one of them was Naked Just Socks, I think.
Yeah, Naked Just Socks. We actually shot, if you look at the back of my, this is the funny story, is that I really raped you when it came
oh,
to.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. Well, because, here's, okay.
you demanded that we include a documentary as a DVD extra.
Because I wanted to be different than everybody else.
I hear you.
I had this mindset of like, I understand what this is. This will be a great documentary, and I will shoot it. And you paid for it.
Oh, but did we ever?
I got the worst guy. I just, instead of hiring your crew, which you were like, I got the guys. I was like, no. I got a guy.
Oh, I remember that.
And I hired this fucking guy. And look, I made the mistakes because I should have told this guy to fuck off at a lot of points. But, you know, it was basically going to be this is my thing. The DVD of the making of a CD.
Oh.
Which nobody seemed
entertainment, to, ladies and gentlemen.
Nobody seemed to get. I remember.
But do you remember we got that crazy, sexy editor to do it?
Who?
To salvage it?
Who? Your wife.
Oh. Oh, is that who edited it?
Well, she saved us because the guy we got to edit it was running up a $10,000 bill.
Oh, my God. I remember we had to pay that. Didn't we have to haggle? Did we get a mediation or something like that?
I think he literally bought a whole new setup.
Oh, it was so expensive.
He didn't have any computers.
I thought that was going to tank the label.
He goes, I feel so bad.
Oh, the bills just started to mount up. I remember that. Oh, it's all coming back to me now like a bad dream.
I remember this piece of shit was like, I need a quad processor. And he gave you a bill. And I remember you were like, what the fuck is this?
I clicked cold sweats when I saw that bill.
Because I shot everything. And he had all the footage. He would not give us the footage. Oh. And the footage was...
And today, he's Rupert Murdoch.
Yeah, right. I remember I shot... He filmed me from New York to Boston.
Oh, and God. He charged us for all his travel, too, didn't he?
He charged you for everything.
Oh.
Everything. And I remember we did an interview with Norton, we did
right.
an interview with Colin.
Yep.
We did all these interviews.
That interview with Colin was great. I think there was Colin at one point was chasing you down his hallway with an axe.
You know, what happened was is that me and Colin always fight physically. We physically wind up getting into it. We fought in Japan.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were in those.
But that era, though, was really when you were getting serious about it. Like, I was getting concerned that the fighting was getting...
No, it was.
He was chasing you with hostile intent.
He broke my rib.
Down the hallway with an axe, hatchet.
No, he was chasing me around his apartment with a hatchet. He broke my rib. He pushed me into a chair.
Oh, on the sidewalk, right?
No, he pushed me into a chair in his apartment, broke my rib. Then I took a cup of water and threw it in his face.
Right.
And then I threw a whole... Oh, he asked me if I wanted a pistachio nut, and I went to grab them, and I smashed them out of his hand. Right. Then he went and got a hatchet.
Right.
But it was like...
By the way, what is he doing with a hatchet?
He loves antique knives and hatchets. He chased me around his apartment with a hatchet.
Oh, boy.
And then I ran down the hallway in his high-rise.
Yeah.
And I hit... I remember I looked...
I think some of that was caught on film.
Huh?
Ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening to this, you can buy this on Just the Tip, the Robert Kelly documentary on DVD.
Yeah, we're still trying to pay it off, so yeah, please go buy it.
Please, buy two copies. Help out Viacom.
We went...
The share price is sagging.
He came down the hall with headgear on and boxing gloves.
That's right.
And he ran down the hall, punched me in the face... And then kick me in the stomach.
And it was just like a movie. You're hitting the down button. Yeah. Just over and over and over again. In the hopes that it would, the elevator would come. And here comes Colin. And for some reason, headgear and boxing gloves.
But we filmed this whole thing. And then at the point where we got to my show, it cuts off. And it goes, go buy this, the DVD. The audios.
Does it?
Yeah, because we didn't. Oh. It was the DVD of the making of an audio CD. Was the
entertainment, ladies and gentlemen.
So, Colin goes, "What the fuck is this?" In the thing, he goes, "I go, it's the CD. It's the DVD of the making of a CD." He goes, "That is the fucking dumbest thing." Everybody.
But it only cost $100,000.
But anyway, let's not talk about your failures. Let's talk about your success. So.
Oh, it just makes me hurt and scared now.
But anyways, we've done a lot, and that's
but the difference is instead of being able to charge $12.98 for a CD, we could charge $15.98 for a CD DVD combo.
That was the difference. That was probably one of my... I mean, people have always told me that that's my funniest CD.
Yeah, it's a great record.
They love that record. That's a great record. The recording was fucking outrageous.
Yeah, and we had to record it twice, if I remember correctly, right?
We recorded it in Miami.
Right.
And it sucked.
Right.
Then we did it in Boston.
Right.
And we got it. It was a fucking home run.
Yeah, that show was sold out. People were
sold
going crazy.
Sold out. 400 people, two shows, recorded it, and it was fucking... You got your guys to record it. Thank God it wasn't my guy. It would have cost $30 million. So, but well, all right. Listen, man. I mean, it's most of the time I do these one-on-ones with people who are comics, and it's that side of the business. But people don't understand. There's a lot of people behind the scenes making us available to the public. Without being available to the public, we're done. We're just these underground, whatever, comics. That CD, being on the Comedy Central label, being available in stores, being available for digital download, all those things put me in the public eye to, get me available. And it put me out there. Like all these other guys that you did, you were a huge part of comedy in the 2000s. I mean, in Comedy Boom, Comedy Central, and that record label was instrumental. And to think it's a guy who on lies and desperation.
Well, just pure deception. Deception. Thank you, Holly Lim, if you're out there.
Deceptions actually made that happen. And that's fucking epic.
Thanks, man. It was a fun ride. It was a fun ride.
And now, but you're still on it.
Yeah, I love comedy. I want comics to be successful because there's so much talent. There's so much good stuff out there, and
right.
Comedy's a great medium. It makes people happy, and if we can make the comics famous and make people happy, what better out?
Yeah, and if you can fucking make enough money to rent a boat.
Oh yeah, you should see this boat that I kind of maybe destroyed a little bit by backing too hard into the dock on our last day.
Yeah,
the apparently all the dishes fell off the shelves.
Yeah.
They thought we were going to die down the galley.
Well, you have a thing that when the guy said, just go slow. But you have a thing that when you're in danger, you go fast. You almost ripped me off the dock. I was holding onto
the rope. Oh, that was intentional.
I'm holding onto the rope. Oh, and all they hear is, and I had to let go of the rope. And then I screamed your name, and you looked at me. You like, what? I don't know, Jack.
Oh, there was a time when you were standing with no hands on the side of the boat, and just a light push with two fingers on the forehead would have sent you off.
And if you had one funny bone in your body, you would have done it.
I know. This is why I'm industry.
That's why you're on
your
that
talent.
Side.
I would have been in the water.
All right, Jack. Well, listen. If you listen to Raw Dog or any of the comedy stations, this is one of the new guys who's making the changes over there, making it for the better for comedians. And putting a lot more comics on there, and the shows you're putting on too. I mean, you got all these great shows that are coming on the network, that are coming on Sirius. And it's funny too.
Yeah, good stuff.
I was telling my wife, I told Jack, I go, when are you going to give me a show? And I go, Jack went, when you give me something that's good. And I was like, touche. That's a valid fucking point.
And just mean too. I regret saying that.
Yeah. Well, anyway, what are you going to do? Mean's funny. I mean, it did hurt a little bit, and I have a son. But
I didn't say it in front of him.
All right, listen, man. If you hear somebody giggle in the background, this is Ian that has been sitting there very patiently and quietly, who's on a whole nother side of the industry for actors and some comedians, who's an agent. That's like a whole nother thing. Yeah. If I come to LA, I would like to actually interview you on being an agent. I'm sure it won't be as nice. agents have different stories about talent.
They're not Guatemala stories. Yeah,
he's a whole other story. But it's a whole crew of guys that you work with that. The one thing that I learned about you, and I'll say this real quick before we wrap up, is that I've learned through you and Brian Volkweis and Ian and people that I know, you can never judge a book by its cover. You can't look at somebody and assume what they are, because most people surprise you with how much, just how fucking amazing their lives are and how much they know and where they go. I would have never put you, all the crazy things you do and all the places you go and the fearless stuff that you've done just outside of the comedy world, which I think is where comedy comes from. I think where creativity comes from is that if you can go to other countries and meet other people and travel the world and do things that you're afraid of that are a little scary or whatever the fuck, but also get other people to do it too. Like, get me to go to a fucking island with a man, baby, adult head boy.
Oh, we need to go back.
In a Musagati. You know what I mean? That has made me a fucking... I always tell people, do it. If you're afraid of it, do it. Just go. I was scared of this boat trip, to be honest with you. And you're like, yeah, we're going to drive a boat. We're all going to drive it. I'm like, fuck me. And how are we going to drive a fucking boat?
It was pretty scary the first day, I got to say.
It was petrified. We're going through locks like we've been traveling the canals for years.
They gave us a 3.5-minute demonstration on how to steer the boat, and they basically did everything.
Yeah.
And they're like, have at it. Here's how you do the locks. Here's some phone numbers for the lock keeper.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, like you assume that we got the data plan that we can make phone calls.
Yeah.
They didn't even give us a walkie-talkie.
There were a lot of assumptions that they made that they absolutely should not have made.
Like, what if we didn't have a phone? What if we didn't pay the $10 for data fees?
They let us loose with a 14-ton boat.
Yeah.
With almost no instruction.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they almost, and a 250 euro deposit.
Yeah,
and yet it worked for them. You returned the boat. Everything was fine.
Yeah, I guess
barely. When a guy with a few teeth goes, here's the keys. And we're like, all right,
have at it.
All right. Well, listen, Jack Vaughn.
Thanks so much for having me on, Bobby.
Dude, thank you so much. Make sure you listen to Sirius Satellite Radio, Raw Dog,
or the channels,
all the comedy channels, and. And you're the best, buddy. Thanks.
You're the best, man. Thanks
you're
for
the
having
best. Thanks for
stop it.
Thanks for being. Yeah, all right. I'm better. I'm good.
Yeah.
All right. I'll talk to you later. That's a 101. You know what, dude? With the great Jack Vaughn.
See you, everybody.
You've been listening to the YKWD podcast. Thanks for listening. Now go back to your shitty jobs.
Check out riotcast.com for all of the best podcasts on the internet. And they are all free.